From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
What's up, rockers, and welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. This is our little teaser for Rock Month episode. I'm Hunter Deusing in Dallas, Texas, and joining me in the wild outback of Australia is Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
Horns up, fuckers!
Right. And in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado, hanging out with the ghost of John Denver, we've got John Grace. Say hello, John.
Hi. Rock on, bros.
Rock on, brothers.
Yeah.
And hello, brothers, and rock on.
Wasn't that a Dave, what's his name, song? Who's that guy, John?
I don't know.
Did that song called Rock On. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, David Essex.
David Essex, that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally outside my wheelhouse. So,
one of the first metal songs ever, one of the first metal instrumentals, was it him, Dave Essex, and Love Sculpture?
Yeah.
What was that song called?
Essex is forgotten.
Oh, yeah.
He's completely forgotten.
What we should do is put on a Sam Dunn documentary where, like, 100 different musicians take credit for the invention of heavy metal, where we see John Kay talk about how Steppenwolf invented heavy metal, and we see Alice Cooper talk about how he invented heavy metal, and we see Black Sabbath talk about how they invented heavy
metal.
Why
can't we just get a documentary where Gene Simmons invents everything?
Gene Simmons will talk about how he invented heavy metal, and then Robert Plant will vehemently deny inventing heavy metal.
Yeah. But the truth is, I think it was The Who.
I like that theory.
Even though if you listen to him now, it's not metal sounding at all, but it was the gateway to that sound.
Well, they were the loudest band in the world at the time.
Yeah, they were the bridge. They were definitely, I really think they were first. But, you know, it's like no one would call Zeppelin metal nowadays.
No.
I've brought up before. It's like, you know, when I was a kid, it was Blue Oyster Cult and Deep Purple and Zeppelin were all lumped in with Sabbath.
Wasn't Blue Cheetah one of the loudest bands in the world?
Yeah, the Nuge. Even you could even say Cheap Trick because their albums were very guitar heavy. The guitars were very loud, and that kind of defined heavy metal. I mean, they reached a point where it was like you either had to be like Judas Priest or Metallica or Iron Maiden to be heavy metal. But before that, you didn't have to be cartoonish.
John, what do you reckon about Blue Cheer?
I think Blue Cheer is definitely one of the first.
Yeah.
They're heavy. That, like, I listened to that first album not long ago a few times in the gym, and it's really, really heavy, even compared to Hendrix. And Hendrix has got some heavy tracks, but man, Blue Cheer is real close to what it is.
I got to tell you, I had an opportunity to see Blue Cheer. The money was light. I can't remember why I didn't go, but I think I was just kind of poor at the time. And it was a concert I decided not to attend. And the dude died not too long after.
Oh, no.
Curse you.
Yeah, I know. It was a total. It's one of my music regrets is not going to see Blue Cheer when I had the opportunity.
Do you understand? Maybe your percentage of the ticket you had bought may have just saved him.
I know. Yeah. If I had
he may have been like $5 short of a heart transplant or whatever it was, and you didn't go. And you killed him.
I could have given him the triple bypass he needed to survive, but because I was stingy and stayed home, Blue Cheer is no longer with us.
I'd have gone even at risk of bankruptcy because even though they would have likely sucked, because a lot of these old guys are not very good live.
We should name this episode "Hunt to Kill the Guy from Blue Cheer."
Yeah, I'm totally for that.
Yeah, I'm in favor of spreading this meme. You know, we should. Yeah, I take responsibility. I'm sorry, world. It's my fault. I will carry it.
I'd take responsibility for Michael Jackson's death any fucking day of the year.
Well, I know you do. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And I've apparently killed everybody else. So.
Well, there's been about half a dozen people die when we've mentioned them on Rock Month, so we're gonna be damn careful how we tread this year, I think.
just shows how up we are with the kids these days.
Yeah.
Sure. So this episode is one I've wanted to do for a couple years, and I think it's good that we're doing it this year because it's kind of a full slate. You know, we've done a lot of bands with Rock Month, and I wanted to do an episode where we covered albums that bands we've covered have put out since we covered them. So the lineup we have is Van Halen's Tokyo Dome Live in Concert, which is a live album, not technically a new record, but it's any new Van Halen, you know, we're going to, with David Lee Roth, we're going to try to cover.
Exactly. We have to.
We have to. Faith No More's Soul Invictus, which is, you know, Faith No More's long anticipated first album since 1997's Album of the Year. The Cult's Hidden City, which, you know, the newest record they had when we covered them was A Weapon of Choice, Hidden City from 2016. Cheap Trick, We're All Right. Cheap Trick has been, you know, they just put out Bang, Zoom, Crazy, Hello, and I think they've got a new record about to come out. They've been kind of doing the one album a year thing almost.
I think those guys, let's face it, there's probably a short time.
Yeah, there's a small window. Yeah.
And they've got a new drummer and, you know, too. So, you know, they're probably feeling a little energized by that.
Hang on, wait, new drummer? Hang on, you're talking about Dax is gone or you mean with Dax?
No, with Dax.
Oh, okay, yeah. Thank God, I was going to say. I really like Dax a lot.
Yeah. No, Dax Nielsen, because, you know, he's their drummer now. Bunny Carlos is out of the picture. In regards to Glenn Hughes, Black Country Communion has reformed, and they did BCC4, their comeback record, their first one since 2012, Afterglow. And then The Darkness with Pinewood Smile from October 2017. So pretty nice little lineup we've got here that we can talk about, and we're going to go in chronological order, which was the order I just went in. So the first one we're going to talk about is Van Halen Tokyo Dome in Concert. This lineup, just for those of you out in Rio Linda, it's Eddie Van Halen, of course, Alex Van Halen, David Lee Roth, and Wolfgang Van Halen. And it's a double live album. It's pretty full listing. It's got Unchained, Run with the Devil, She's the Woman, I'm the One, Tattoo, Everybody Wants Some, Somebody Get Me a Doctor, Chinatown, Hear About It Later, Oh Pretty Woman, Me and You, drum solo, You Really Got Me, Dance the Night Away, I'll Wait, In the Cradle Will Rock, Hot for Teacher, Women in Love, Romeo Delight, Mean Street, Beautiful Girls, Ice Cream Man, Panama, Eruption, Ain't Talking About Love and Jump. So you got a little smattering of the different kind of truth stuff with a lot of the classic David Lee Roth stuff, none of the Sammy Hagar stuff. So I think the big thing everybody was talking about when this album came out, because this was a pretty big release, because anytime Van Halen puts anything out, it's a big release. Mm. But the big thing everybody was talking about with this album was they kind of realized David Lee Roth can't sing. David Lee Roth sounds – I mean, it's a very – I think it's a very honest live album. It doesn't try to cover up the weaknesses of the band, but – it's very clear that David Lee Roth is not a singer. But, you know, what we like about David Lee Roth, I'm kind of speaking for you guys and you can correct me, is that he is sort of a pro wrestler figure. He's not a – like Sammy Hagar is more of a singer than David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
But David Lee Roth is a performer. He's a pro wrestler. He's a personality.
He's a frontman. He's a real frontman.
Yes, he is a frontman. That is a great way to put it. And
– best way would the – best thing would have been to have, from the inception, David Lee Roth as the front man, but miming the hidden vocals of Sammy Hagar. It would have been perfect. I mean, Van Halen's albums, the studio ones, save for Diver Down. I don't particularly care much for that.
Diver Down is basically a not-so-good David Lee Roth.
Nobody likes Diver Down.
No, I don't particularly do. I mean, there's a couple of tracks in there I really like Hang 'Em High and...
Full Bug.
Oh, yeah, Full Bug, yeah.
Here's the thing about Diver Down. Diver Down, as far as the Van Halen Roth era album goes, is not very good. If it was any other band's album, it would be pretty good.
Yeah.
Nah.
It'd be a decent debut on an indie label or something.
Boys, I got to say this. This has been killing me for 2 days. I heard this 2 days ago. You never heard a man's heart break more than when you did when I listened to this album. It was just... Oh. I knew nothing about it. I didn't know nothing about the Lee Roth, you know, talk about his vocals, but... Oh, fuck.
Yeah, it sounds like a... If you didn't know beforehand that Roth's voice doesn't cut it anymore, and it's debatable whether or not his voice could cut it even back in the early 80s and late 70s, and hence that's why he did the whole Vegas stage shtick. You know, if you didn't know, you would think this was just a poor-sounding bootleg.
Yeah, or even a bad rehearsal.
And apparently he handpicked this performance.
Yeah.
This was not like, you know, he was very, I think it was almost like, I think it's almost he's aware of how poor his voice sounds, but he was kind of going, you know, just kind of running off my personality here at this point.
You know, it's a good point you bring up. I'm sorry, John. I just really want to bring this up quick. Do you feel like Dave actually sabotaged the whole album? Because, man, it anyone with half a fucking brain, you know, or an ear for music would know that that is unreleasable, that album.
Yeah.
It's just, it's almost like Dave said, okay, these performances are shit. I don't care. I'm putting it out to just give a middle finger to the Van Halen brothers. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
I don't know if it was self-sabotage or it's like this is the best he can do.
I don't think it's self-sabotage because I think it's honestly that's just where Dave is, and I think the band understands that's where they are, and that's it.
Yeah, I should point out, like, when they first reunited back in, what was it, 2008 and did a tour? Is it 2008, 2009? I can't remember.
Yeah, it was somewhere around there because it was a big deal.
I watched some video bootlegs, and his voice was in better shape. And he was in better shape. You know, of course, he's 10 years younger, but the performances were far better there. If they were going to put out a live album, they should have put out one from that tour.
Yeah, because there's really nothing off what was the latest album they did? The Different Kind of Truth? That really needed to be in that set where you think, oh, I've got to hear it from... Yeah, I got to hear that. It's like really nothing.
Got to hear the live version of Tattoo. She's the Woman.
Yeah, that's like really... if they were bonus tracks, fine. But they didn't really need to be on the album. I wouldn't mind a couple more from, you know, Women and Children First, to be honest with you. But...
Yeah.
Or Van Halen 2 or 1 or, you know, whatever. But I sat there and I thought, my God, okay, maybe just the first few songs he's warming up and it'll get better. And I just never did. And not to mention his vocals are bad. He's out of time with the rest of the band by half a step.
Yeah,
like he's always playing catch up with the vocals to the music. And I'm like, fuck, Dave. I mean, you've been doing these songs, some of them for 40 years. You should, or what was this 2013 recording? 35 years. You should know what you're doing. That's why that's why I brought up about the self sabotage thing where it just sounds like crap. You know, it wasn't deliberate, but.
Yeah, and I've watched, like, collected, like, video bootlegs and stuff of his live performances, like, from the 90s solo, and he was never this bad. Like, he kept it somewhat competent, and he was always in step with his, you know, whatever band he had hired for that tour.
Yeah, it's... I don't know if it's just the wheels falling off or what. I think Dave probably picked this one because it's Japan. And Dave has a affinity for Japan. But Van Halen never released a live album with David Lee Roth before this, if I'm mistaken.
No, never.
No, they never did. Just
they did. Yeah, they did once with Sammy. But they never did one with Dave, and this is one with Dave. And I remember when this came out, everybody was kind of disappointed with it. Everybody was kind of like, oh, you know, Dave's not really a... He doesn't sound good. It's not a very good record. His vocals are kind of, you know, he just doesn't sound very good on it. And they didn't it you know, honestly, like most live albums are, they do a lot of re-recording in the studio. And to this album's credit, they didn't try to correct anything. And maybe it is a pretty honest where Van Halen is.
You couldn't salvage it, right? You couldn't salvage it. It was beyond repair. Right.
Yeah, it's you. For whatever reason, they decided not to change it, And it's for better or worse, it's an honest audio sample of where Van Halen is right now. And
I will say as well, and I think everybody else here will agree with me that the Van Halens themselves sound great. There's no fault there.
Yeah, no, the band is perfect. It's Dave that's the controversial part. And,
yeah,
you know, I think it's like the hard pills to swallow meme, where for years and years people were going, oh, it's not Van Halen without David Lee Roth, you know. But, you know.
Boy, I bet you Sammy Hagar was...
Sammy sounds better now.
I was going to say, I bet you Sammy Hagar was rubbing his hand thinking, yep, I've just proved all the doubters wrong all these years.
Oh, I think I've heard him comment on it, but I could be wrong. I'm just kind of, you know, this was back in 2015. I'll have to go cast my mind back to the Eddie Trunk.
Well, the Eddie Trunk clip that went around was, Dave was never a good singer. Wasn't the point.
Yes.
He's the Toastmaster. He's the party guy, the party host. That's the point. He was never a singer.
Yeah.
He could never sing.
I don't think that's true.
Yeah, I don't think it's true either. Because if
Dave couldn't sing, then Van Halen never would have been a popular group. I mean,
well, if you can find that footage online of the Oakland show that was filmed for during the Fair Warning tour, that's where they pulled the Unchained music video from. But he sounds terrific in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I don't buy the meme that David Lee Roth was never a singer.
Yeah.
But I do think that David Lee Roth, more so than Sammy Hagar, is a performer. He's a personality. He's a pro wrestler.
Yeah.
Who is he, John? Did you say Jim Dandy? Just a refined
version. Yeah, he's Jim Dandy from Black Oak, Arkansas.
Yeah. David Lee Roth has said that Jim Dandy from Black Oak, Arkansas, is his chief inspiration.
Yeah, I mean the tight pants and the hair and the kicks and stuff. That was all Jim Dandy in the old days.
So but this album, it's shit, man.
Let's call it for what it is.
I've barely listened to it. It's not something I reach for.
I did a download. I wasn't gonna buy it because the word of mouth was bad. So I downloaded it just to see if it was worth a purchase to own a CD. And I listened to it once then, and I listened to it once today. And that's it. I'm not going to listen to it again.
It's a tough 2 hours to get through.
So what would you give it? John, what's your rating for Van Halen?
I'd give it like a 3.
Yeah. My rating's a 4. I mean, I think the Van Halen's, the Van Halen brothers and sons sound great, but it's not a very good live record. Stu, what about you?
I'm with John. I got my notes here. 3.
3.
It's hard.
I wanted to give the Van Halens a little more credit. I mean, Eddie sounds awesome.
That 3 is for the Van Halens themselves, but Dave is such a prominent part of Van Halen.
Oh yeah, David Lee Roth.
He's the component that mixes with the Van Halen sound, and when your vocals are as bad as this, I just can't give it nothing more than a 3.
And a lot of people, you know, refuse to acknowledge Van Halen without Roth. You know, it's Van Hagar, bruh. You know.
Yeah. They have fun drinking your milk and driving a minivan.
Exactly. I know we like to talk about Van Halen with Sammy Hagar being an adult contemporary band, but, you know, Sammy's a talented individual. He comes to play, and he's old as hell now, but he sounds great.
Hey, Sammy still looks and sounds great at age 70.
Sammy probably didn't smoke.
Yeah.
Look, Roth puts away like a pack of Marlboro Reds a day. You know, it's like he still smokes.
I didn't know Dave was a smoker.
He smokes cigarettes. I don't know if he does anymore, but I know he smokes, and he smokes weed, and but he's a workout fanatic, so he hides it well, you know.
Well, there you go. Smoking weed is a that'll mess up your voice.
And the thing is as well, people out there who say, oh, you know, Van Hagar, no good, they're the same ones who were not around, weren't old enough in 1985, 1986, when 5150 come out, to realize how fucking massive that album was. It was enormous.
Great album.
Damn near on par with 1984 in terms of popularity.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was big.
It was huge.
So, so let's switch gears from Van Halen to...
I do want to mention one more thing, Hunter.
Okay.
You do at least get an opportunity to hear David Lee Roth mangle Japanese in front of the Tokyo crowd.
Konnichiwa! Wow!
You know. Just...
Whoa!
So there is some of that that is expected. They might have been better off releasing this as a DVD or Blu-ray.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing, is I was thinking it would be better to have this as a visual performance, because at least that would take away from the audio.
And you can see how old they were and excuse David Lee's vocals.
Yes, exactly.
He shows his age. He's looking pretty old these days.
Yeah, exactly. If you add a video component to anything, it changes the way people perceive it. The Nixon-Kennedy debates will tell you that.
Yeah.
If we were going to get Van Halen,
by Roth's own admission, I'm starting to look like Lee Marvin, so, and that's why he did the Sopranos cameo.
So let's shift gears to a band that's nothing like Van Halen, Faith No More. Soul Invictus from May 2015, very highly anticipated album. It's their first album since 1997's Album of the Year, produced by their bass player Billy Gould. The album is the same lineup from Album of the Year. You've got Mike Borden on drums, Roddy Bottom on keyboards and backing vocals, Billy Gould on bass guitar, John Hudson on guitar, and Mike Patton, of course, on vocals. The track listing is Soul Invictus, Superhero, Sunny Side Up, Separation Anxiety, Cone of Shame, Rise of the Fall, Black Friday, Motherfucker, and Matador, and From the Dead. And so this album... I think this one a little more so controversial than the Van Halen one, but this was a pretty controversial release. A lot of people defending it, a lot of people hating it. What did you guys think of Soul Invictus? We'll start with you, Stu.
Okay, so it's Faith No More. So yeah. I was hot and cold on them when we did the episode a number of years back.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, this is a band that we were all three of us kind of back and forth on. Like,
yeah.
Loving some stuff they did and hating some stuff they did. Me on the loving side of more than anything, but you were kind of hot and cold on them.
Yeah, I mean, what was that second album they did? We Care A Lot. Was that it?
Care A Lot, yeah.
Yeah, that one I think I rated the highest. I think it was a great album.
That was
still
your
good.
Favorite. That was your favorite.
And, it was.
By the way, since we did our Faith No More episode, the singer on that album, Chuck Mosley, has passed away.
Yes, so. Another the MMC curse continues, I guess.
Dead, because we talked about you, bro.
We talked about Chuck, he's dead.
and there was that one, I think it was at Angel Dust, it was just like, ugh. God, that was horrible.
I John and I think John, I could be wrong, but I think Angel Dust is an extremely interesting album.
It's the only one that holds up for me.
I think Angel Dust has aged well, whereas The Real Thing, while I think The Real Thing is a really good rock album, it has aged in terms of its production.
Yeah.
To me, it's like the audio equivalent of a Body Glove t-shirt. It is totally 1991 spring break. You know, it's just like it's very of its
sound.
Yeah, it sounds like 1991. And what I thought was impressive vocals from Mike Patton, it's actually completely overdone. And you know, it's a young guy's idea of good singing. You know,
and the thing is, you say it's a young guy's idea of good singing. He does not do any of that on any other album he's ever
done. I know. It's that's the intriguing thing.
But anyway, all right.
No.
So Soul
Invictus, I think it kind of picks up where Album of the Year left off. It's a weird record, which Album of the Year was a real weird record. So, Stuart, what were some impressions you had?
Okay, so as I was saying, I was very, very hot and cold towards Faith No More, have been since I bloody heard them back in, what was it, 91, when that epic song came out. But anyway, so I listened to this one with clear mind, no preconceived notions, and I've got to say, actually enjoyed it.
Good.
I really enjoyed it. There's some songs there, like, they've gone back to their you know, weird ass ways and whatever. And but on the whole, actually, yeah, actually really enjoyed it. Got to say, to be honest with you.
Yeah, John, what about you?
That was okay. I wasn't blown away. I don't listen to a ton of new rock. I hardly listen to any new rock music at all, and don't listen to much old rock all that much. But I thought it was okay. Nothing really stood out as exceptional or anything. And I don't know if it's the way the albums are mixed today, if you want to call it the loudness wars or trend or whatever, the compression. But it's a lot of this stuff. It's just it's almost like it's too loud for me. And it could be my hearing. I have some bouts with tinnitus every now and then for about 10 seconds once a month, and it could be that.
Well,
if it's too loud, man, you're too old.
Yeah,
too old, John.
Although I've been like blasting Motorhead for my kid and Hendrix and that stuff in the car, and that sounds fine. So
can't take the heat.
It could be I'm lost on production trends. Maybe that's it.
I'm with you. Yeah, productions these days are just, you know, cranked up to 11. It's just ridiculous.
There's that. I think if you're doing the Hendrix thing with your kid, Doug Pinnick just did a Hendrix tribute album. So speaking of bands covered on the MMC, King's X, Doug Pinnick, he just released a Hendrix tribute album.
I thought you were going to say he just died.
Well, it would have shocked. Doug Pinnick is like 70 years old. I mean,
shit.
I was no, dude, that guy's old. Like, I saw King's X a few months ago, and Doug was playing, and the guy who was with me went, "How old is that guy?" And I was like, "He's way older than he looks," you know. But this guy I teach with is a big King's X fan, and he was saying he was a fan when they first broke, and he said he remembers thinking, "Man, that guy's old." Doug Pinnick was like 30.
He's the Stiv Bators of the kind of Christian-friendly metal.
Right, right. Yeah, this guy was definitely in the Christian-friendly rock scenes. So.
Yeah, everybody who loves King's X is usually either born again or, like you, a recent convert to the Church of Rome.
Or they have spent some time in the born again scene.
Yeah, yeah. It's always people connected with that who will tell you they're religious. It's those are the King's X fans.
My wife's cousin's husband, when I was at the King's X show, he messaged me on Facebook afterward. He goes, "I totally saw you at the show. I wasn't sure." And you know, they come from that scene. But
King's X is what Stryper wishes they were.
No, it's exactly. You're absolutely right. They have that cult following that crosses over from the Christian crowd to the secular crowd. Yeah. Like the Rush fans, like some Rush fans who've heard them like King's X. But anyway, King's X, I wish, had put out a new album since we covered them, but they haven't. Apparently, rumors are they're recording something, but Ty Tabers and Doug Pinnick have done some stuff on their own since we've covered them. But anyway, my thing with the new Faith No More, I think it has some classic Faith No More songs. I love Soul Invictus, Superhero, Separation Anxiety. I think Sunny Side Up's a funny song, Cone of Shame, Matador. I mean, I think there's a lot of classic Faith No More stuff on there from the, you know, if you like the latter period sound.
Don't forget Black Friday, man, the anti-consumerism song.
Oh yeah! No. By the way, Black Friday, you know, Record Store Day, pick up the new single, right? But I liked this record quite a bit. But you know, a lot of people in the metal and rock community were hating on it, and I kind of understand why. I mean, Faith No More has always, ever since Angel Dust, has been kind of a divisive band, and I understand if people aren't into it, but I enjoyed this record quite a bit. And you know, I was listening to it today and I was like, I still like a lot of these songs. What would you give it, Stu, out of 10?
I've got 6 for it.
6 for it. Okay. John, what about you?
I give it like a 5. It's not hating on it. Nothing stood out as exceptional.
Nothing stood out
to me. Yeah.
I mean, I give it a 7. I like a lot of the songs on it. it was a favorite of the year for me. I saw them on the tour with Napalm Death, and the show was awesome when I saw them. It was great. They were wearing
the only thing I linen. I just wish Jim Martin was back. I mean, I know he's been gone a long time. They're just missing his guitar sound. That's what I'm.
I think he added a lot to the band that he's not given credit for.
I agree. Jim Martin is a missed component to that group. And I know at Metallica's Orion Fest a few years back, which is a now defunct music festival, Patton and Martin played with Infectious Grooves. Martin was playing with Infectious Grooves, and they did a Immigrant Song together.
Yeah. Really?
I take that back. It might have been Martin with Infectious Grooves, and Patton was there with them, but he might not have been performing.
Come on, man. When they do some Psycho Michael stuff, man.
Psycho Michael. Yeah. All right. So Sol Invictus, I really like it, but it is a divisive album. Like, a lot of Faith No More stuff since The Real Thing. So,
and the thing I liked about it as well, it's not overly long. It's just 40 minutes done.
No, it's a short and sweet album.
Mm.
Yeah, props for that.
Yes. So next up, we have The Cult. The Cult, their 2016 album, The Hidden City. The producer is Bob Rock of Metallica fame.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And the track listing, you have Dark Energy, No Love Lost, Dance the Night, In Blood, Birds of Paradise, Hinterland, Goat, Deeply Ordered Chaos, Avalanche of Light, Lilies, Heathens, Sound and Fury. And the personnel lineup, you've got the main band is Ian Astbury, Billy Duffy, and John Tempesta on the drums. So Hidden City, I thought... It's kind of a hit or miss album for me. It has songs I really like and songs that may as well not exist for me.
Yeah.
What about you guys? What do you think?
Okay, so I popped it on, heard the first track, Dark Energy. I'm like, it's okay. A bit of a throwaway.
Dark Energy's fun.
It's okay. Second track, No Love Lost. I'm like, here we go. This sounds like The Cult. Okay. This is my favorite off the album for sure. And I'm like, okay. Can the rest of the album be like this? Can we get somewhere near as close to as electric, as good as that? But, I mean, it's got moments on there, sure. And it's got some which, like you said, are just, you know, forgettable. But, I mean, overall, it's okay. It's not not a complete disaster.
No, I don't think it's a disaster at all. I think it's an album that has some really good songs and some forgettable songs.
I will say, I'm sorry, the only thing I do not like is, again, back to the singer that can't quite keep it together, Ian Astbury just doesn't sound very good. He's not like the Ian Astbury off Sonic Temple or some of the other albums or Electric.
No, I think his voice is going. I could hear it. It's just like, I think it's fading.
Ian Astbury is a singer that whenever he performs live, it kind of depends on his mood and his conditions. You know, you'll hear people say he was great. Like, I saw him open for Guns N' Roses, and I thought he was awesome. But you'll hear people a few nights later say he sucked. You know, it just kind of depends. You know, John, you've told me he's pretty mercurial. You'll see him and he's great, and you'll see him and he's terrible.
I've heard from people, like, I saw them on the Electric anniversary tour where they performed the Electric album, and I thought they sounded good, and then somebody saw them the following year and opening, or no, they had a band opening for them, and he said the opening band blew them off the stage. They were awful. So you just never know. Like, some people have seen them and said, man, they're dreadful. How many more years do they have left? And others will say, oh, that was one of the best shows I've seen.
The Cult is just such a mercurial group. I mean, I think Hidden City is an album that's kind of indicative of where they are, because it has songs that are totally forgettable, and I think it has songs that are totally catchy and extremely fun.
Is Astbury still singing with the Doors or not?
No. Rayman Zurek's dead. Like, No Rayman Zurich.
Oh, is he?
No,
oh, fuck. Didn't even know that.
Yeah, yeah. Rayman Zurich died a few years ago.
Did we talk about the Doors? Was that after Doors Rock Month?
No, we've never done the Doors.
Darn. Okay.
I mean, the closest we've done to the Doors is the Cult.
Right. Yeah, if we ever did the Doors, I'd be sick that week, I think. I mean, I don't mind them, but Christ, a whole episode on the Doors would be a bit much for me.
I like a lot of the Doors stuff, but, you know, I'm kind of like Jim Morrison. I think he's a guy who's really good when he's not when people aren't telling him that he's, you know, the Lizard King, God singer. You know, he's good when he's being a rock singer.
Although, having said that, there is a DVD out there. I don't know if it's available in the US, but it is over here, which has got 3 of the Doors home videos on them, which I have, and it's actually a good release. Well worth your money.
Mm. No, they've got some good stuff. I mean, there's some good material the Doors released.
I mean, that iconic Greatest Hits album theirs is fantastic. You know, but that's about it really for me. I really couldn't delve into some of their other stuff. You know, like the Morrison Hotel.
So, Stu, what would you give Hidden City, the Cult?
Okay, I liked it just a tad less than the Faith No More album, so I'll give it about a 5.
Yeah.
5.5, around there somewhere.
John, what about you?
I give it a 5. It's too elliptical. One track will be decent, and then it'll be boring, and then it'll be decent again.
I thought Weapon of Choice was a much better record.
Oh, yeah, way better. I was surprised. It was
very consistent album. This album, I'm with you guys. I'm giving it a 5. I think it has some really good songs. I mean, I really like Dark Energy. I like Dance the Night, you know, Hinterland Goat, Deep Order Chaos. It has some good songs on there.
Yeah.
It's Weapon of Choice or Choice of Weapon was a very consistent record. This one is not. It's good song, boring song, good song, boring song.
Yeah, it's basically like a typical 90s release from the Cult.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's
if you harken back to Ceremony or those albums that pretty much debuted in the cutout bin, this is what that sounds like. It just doesn't sound like a follow-up to Sonic Temple or Electric.
That is a perfect analogy. It does sound like a 90s Cult record. Ceremony, the self-titled. All those albums had good songs, and they had plenty of forgettable stuff on them. So
yeah, they're really the band's never really been consistent. It's mm-hmm. unfortunate.
Yep. So next album we're going to talk about is Cheap Tricks. We're all right from June 2017, produced by Cheap Trick and Julian Raymond. The tracks you got 10 tracks. You've got It Going On, Long Time Coming, Nowhere, Radio Lover, Lolita, Brand New Name on an Old Tattoo, Floating Down, She's All Right, Listen to Me, and The Rest of My Life. And the lineup is the same as Bang Zoom Crazy Hello, the last album we covered. Robin Zander leads vocals and guitar. Rick Nielsen, guitar, backing vocals. Tom Peterson, bass and backing vocals. And Dax Nielsen on drums, replacing Bunny Carlos, as he did on the album before that. We're all right. To me, this album had kind of more of a fuzzier 70s kind of. We're trying to, you know, I thought Bang Zoom Crazy Hello sounded very polished.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this one was going for the fuzzy 70s sound, and that, you know, it's kind of telegraphed in the cover and the title that recalls, you know, Surrender. It recalls that, and, you know, so the production is a little more, it's, you know, we're going to bring up this theme later. It's a little more 70s, so fuzzy. What did you guys think?
I thought that a lot of the songs of this were most likely holdovers from Bang Zoom that just weren't good enough to be on Bang Zoom. I mean, I like the album, don't get me wrong. As good as Bang Zoom, no, that was a damn near perfect album, and probably one of my favorite.
Bang Zoom is, that album is great.
That's in my top 5 Cheap Trick albums, easily.
Yeah, yeah, this album is pretty good.
Yeah, I agree with that, pretty good. Got some. It's The only thing I wish it did have was stuff like When I Wake Up Tomorrow, more of the quieter moments, but still a good song. This one just seems to go just balls out rock, which kind of sounds contradictory for me, because I just love rock, you know, like all of us do here, but...
It's got a really straight-ahead rock feeling. It almost felt like they were trying to sort of market it as a throwback a little bit.
Well, you listen to Long Time Coming, the first single was like they're trying to channel AC/DC.
I listened to it for the first time probably since it came out today. Yeah. And I noticed that like half the songs sound like Shot Down in Flames. I mean, you could sing the lyrics of Shot Down in Flames to half the songs on this album. I'm not kidding.
Shot Down in Flames.
Yeah. I got the whole AC/DC vibe as well. It's like, what, did they wish that, you know, they had the AC/DC production
just wait till we talk about Black Country Communion and the Rage Against the Machine. I think that's interesting because this album came out very quickly after Bang Zoom Crazy. And it's not a bad record at all.
No.
I enjoy most of the songs on it, but if I'm reaching for a Cheap Trick record, it's not going to be one I reach for.
Found was it doesn't have any hooks in it. It doesn't have a song that just pops out at you.
Not at all. Like, Bang Zoom Crazy definitely does. Like, there are songs on that record where I go, boom, those are the songs I think of when I think of this album. When I brought up this album for this episode, I was going, I don't know the song. I can't hear a song in my head.
Mm.
There's no power pop.
No.
It has no power pop at all.
Yeah, and that's the kind of band this is. They're a power pop band, and you should, if you're bringing up a Cheap Trick record, there should be a song that comes to mind. Even The Doctor, which is one of the worst Cheap Trick albums.
Oh, the worst.
There is a song that comes to mind.
Same with Busted.
When you bring that up,
yeah.
I hear It's Up to You pop into my head, even though, you know, I may not want it to. It's an album that has a distinct identity. We're All Right really doesn't. It does kind of feel like an odds and ends of Bang Zoom Crazy Hello, which is a darn near perfect record.
John,
I ain't gonna lie. It feels a little weird that that our old drummer is gone.
Really?
Yes.
Nah.
Yeah, but Bunny Carlos to me, he's as much Cheap Trick as the other guys.
But I'm telling you, if you had Bunny Carlos in the band, you wouldn't be getting two albums in 2 years. you really wouldn't.
I think Stuart has a point that if Bunny Carlos was in the band, our output would be slower.
Yeah,
a lot.
hey,
John, say it. Let's hear it.
What?
Woke Up With a Monster, man. It's one of the most underrated albums.
Well, it's not Woke Up With a Monster.
People just seem to forget that album. It's such a good album. Deep cuts.
I requested those cuts for their concert. They asked me for suggestions, and I brought up all the Woke Up With a Monster songs, and they don't know them.
Listen, that album was produced by Ted Templeman.
Him and his fucking cutout Ben praise. So.
Oh, my God.
Exemplary of the retarded,
retarded. I honestly think that Eddie Trunk is hired by record companies to promote cutout bin material.
Yeah. Oh,
people sell it because they make the profit.
Because people will buy it at Barnes & Noble. They'll go and buy Woke Up With a Monster at Barnes & Noble.
Yeah. 180 gram vinyl, Woke Up With a Monster.
Exactly.
No, so if you go out down to your latest store.
Right on vinyl, so...
Just a message, folks. Get out to your local Walmart. There's the winery dogs in the cutout bin.
Yeah, which is a band I'm responsible for creating.
Yeah, not that I'm big note myself, but just saying.
I serve all the credit.
He's atrocious. He is so awful.
Oh,
he
yeah.
is. I will say, though, I do own We're All Alright and Woke Up With a Monster on vinyl. So there
of course you do.
All right, Trunk Hater, so you say.
I also have The Doctor on vinyl, so there you go.
Really? Shit.
I actually have The Doctor on vinyl.
I have a copy of it on vinyl. I was like, I can't pass it up. You know,
is there any Cheap Tricks on vinyl you don't have? I'm not being facetious. I'm really asking.
No, I don't have. Let me see. I don't have.
Budokan?
I don't have Sergeant Pepper Live.
Oh fuck! Don't, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Studio and Budokan.
Okay. So I don't have Special One. I don't have Rockford. I don't have the latest.
Did they even get a vinyl release at that time?
I don't think so.
This is early 2000s, through 2000s.
Woke Up With Monster got one not too long ago, and that's when I got it. But The Doctor, A Lap of Luxury. I don't have Busted. I don't have that one.
No.
Which I'm sure exists on vinyl.
Oh, yeah, it does.
You're not
I've
a
said...
true fan, Hunter. You're not a true fan.
I know. You're not a real fan.
Not a but, real fan at all.
No, I've got everything up to Lap of Luxury. I don't have Busted. I have Woke Up With a Monster. I don't have Cheap Trick 97, Special One, Rockford, or the latest, but everything after that, pretty much.
Should mention as well that Cheap Trick also released another album in 2017, which is a Christmas album, which I've not even heard yet.
I don't know that one. I didn't even know that came out.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
Some good tracks on there.
Just like the Twisted Sister Christmas album. There's some good deep cuts.
It's really good.
So what would you guys give We're All Right, Stu?
Well, I thought the album was all right, and I'll give it a 7.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go with the same thing. I'm going to give it a 7 as well.
I'll give it a 6.
John gives it a 6.
John's in a bad mood tonight. Shit.
Well, I it's hard to get enthusiastic when you're like kind of cramming your listening sessions of the stuff the last few days. They're like,
let's be honest, like, you know, a lot of the stuff we're talking about tonight, you know, is not revolutionary. There's some albums I really like, though.
And I'll put it this way. It does not help that I've been introducing my son to classic stuff and listening to a lot of that in the past few weeks.
And then you have to listen to this.
You got to switch over and listen to new stuff. It's like, oh, God, what is going on with music today?
Right.
Yeah.
So speaking of what's going on with music today, Black Country Communion 4. So we covered Glenn Hughes. Black Country Communion was a band he formed with Joe Bonamassa, Derek Sheeranian, and Jason Bonham. And they did 3 albums in like 2 years, plus a live record. And then they broke up, but they got back together in September 2017. They released BCC4. So this is the 4th Black Country Communion record. Very anticipated for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just because it was – because I liked the Black Country Communion stuff so much. Stuart, for this episode, was this your first time hearing it?
Yes, it was.
What'd you think?
Okay. You know me. I love me some Glenn Hughes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I love me some Black Country Communion as well. You turned me on to them, so.
Absolutely.
And I anticipated it, and I'm going to say this straight out. Glenn Hughes, Derek Sherinian, Jason Bonham, Joe Bonamassa, stellar playing. Can't be faulted. Yeah. But the album went on and on and on and on.
Yeah, it runs an hour. Runs a goddamn hour.
Yes. This album is an hour long. All the songs are like 6 to 7 minutes long.
Yeah.
This is a... Okay, so Black Country Communion has always been a 70s throwback band, right?
Yeah.
It's a band of people who lived or love that stuff. Mm-hmm. Lived in the case of Glenn Hughes, loved in the case of Joe and Jason and Derek. But... with this stuff, this is like it's like Deep Purple in rock times 2, where it's not prog, where the songs are long and complex. These are just long 70s style songs, Deep Purple pre Glenn Hughes, and honestly, my thing with this album was it was kind of, I don't want to say this because it makes it sound like I dislike the album more than I do. I think it's a perfectly fine record. I think, but to me, being loving the first, especially the first and third Black Country records, I thought this album was kind of like air being let out of a tire. And honestly, Glenn is a singer who still has the pipes, if as far as I know.
Yeah.
And the production on this, I think, buries him a little bit.
It's too loud. It's too loud. It's the, as John was saying before, one of the albums that suffers from the loudness of all the overly compressed sound.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It suffers from the loudness war.
Yeah. Unfortunately. And I will say this, actually, Glenn Hughes' solo that we talked about last year was a better album than this one, in my opinion.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I would agree.
I 100% agree that Glenn Hughes' solo record from last year is better than this album.
Damn good album, that one.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, that album, if you're a 70s rock fan, you'll love it. If you like doom metal, you'll love it. If you like pop, you'll love it. I mean, it's just, it's got so much right there. This album, it feels
like a band under pressure in the studio.
Yeah.
Because there's just so much anticipation for it.
Yeah, it felt like a band that's coming back and is trying to do what they need to do for their audience.
It's not like the first Black Country album where they just let rip because there was no anticipation.
Yeah! The first Black Country album is great.
Oh, it's the best of the lot, in my opinion.
I mean, what was
to me, this is just a Deep Purple tribute record.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And what was it? Just to let the listeners know, Stuart was visiting me when I showed him Black Country Communion, the first record, and I was playing it, and Stuart was just sitting there. He wasn't doing anything. He was just sitting. Mm. And me being anxious and weird, I went, oh, he probably doesn't like it. Oh, and I went, okay, I'll put on a different song. And Stuart goes, no. It's good.
That's the way I rock out, like, Hunter, at age 40. At age 45, whatever I am. I
kind of understood that when Stu likes something, he is still.
What happens? I'm still, I form this sort of bubble around me. I don't want to be interrupted. I don't want to hear nothing. I just want to hear what I'm hearing. So when I got I got some fidgety guy next to me going, oh, I'll turn it off. I'm like, no, leave it.
Yeah. I was going, oh, Stu must not like this. I was playing in Black Country, and Stu was like, no, 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 what are you doing? Leave it. Leave it. I'm listening.
Yeah.
Stuart was very happy with Black Country.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was going, oh, he would love this stuff. And but, you know, this album, you know, it was Black Country's return, and I personally found it, I thought it had good songs on it. It wasn't bad, but it was not.
It was just there.
Yeah,
it just lay there.
I mean, frankly, okay, if I'm gonna do a little dress down of Black Country albums, first album I think is great. Second album has some good songs. Overall, not a fan really. Third album I think is really good. This album is more like the second album where it has stuff I like, but it's not really an album.
Yeah, that's right. It's like the evens of the. Sort of
it's like the opposite of Star Trek movies.
Yeah, it's a reverse Star Trek syndrome. Yeah, it's like within the odd one.
John, any thoughts there? Any additional?
It's got problems. It sounds too clean in a way.
Yeah.
After complaining about albums sounding too loud and messy, now I'm saying that one is sounding too clean. It just sounds too contrived and, you know, more studio created than it should.
Although, Bono Master on this album, that guy's a fucking monster of a guitar player. My God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My God, he's good.
He really is. I like him singing more than I like. I mean, I like Glenn singing more than I like him.
Hmm.
I'm going to say that.
Yeah.
Although I do think, what's the song? The last song for My Resting Place. I think that was a pretty good song. With Joe singing. even though I prefer Glenn.
Yeah. Glenn's, he's still got it, though, vocally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Glenn.
He sounds good.
No, no, no. Give me that next Glenn solo record, baby, because it's going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, though. You don't know Glenn Hughes. Sometimes he can just pop out and just say, no, I'm doing a funk album. It's like, oh, okay.
Yep.
It's, I mean, he's got got range. Musically, he's Michael got, and Jackson. Vocally, he's got range. I mean, look, at this is the same guy who did that solo album from last year, or 2016, whatever it was, to the guy who did Play Me Out in the late 70s. So, I mean, he's got range.
Yep.
You know, he's not a one-trick pony. He's not like Dee Snider and fucking Twisted Sister.
No, Glenn Hughes is one of the most talented musicians from the 70s in terms of the rock scene, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah, easily.
But moving on.
Well, are we going to grade this thing or what?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So Black Country Communion, what would you give it to?
It pains me to say just a 5, that's all. It's just there.
Well, I would give it a 6. It's got some good songs. It's got some forgettable songs. Meh, but, you know, it's got talented people. John, what would you give it?
I give it a 6. There's enough. There's a couple of good tracks. It doesn't. It's not horrible. I might listen to it again. I don't hate it. Yeah.
I might give. It, I might. Yeah. I might join your boys. I'll give it a 6 too.
When I listened to it, I went, I would listen to this again. You know, but speaking to listening to stuff again, the last album we have is The Darkness, Pinewood Smile, from October 2017. The Darkness, produced by Adrian Bushby. We have the song, 10 songs, All the Pretty Girls, Buccaneers of Hispaniola, Solid Gold, Southern Trains, Why Don't the Beautiful Cry, Japanese Prisoner in Love, Lay Down with Me, Barbara, I Wish I Was in Heaven, Happiness, and Stampede of Love. Yeah. And the lineup, we have Justin Hawkins on vocals, Dan Hawkins, his brother, on guitars, Frankie Poulin on bass, and Rufus Taylor on drums, the son of Queen's drummer. So
Roger Taylor.
Yeah. There you go. What did you think of Pinewood Smile? I mean, we talked about this a lot. Anybody who's in the Midnight Movie Cowboys Facebook group is probably gonna, no surprise here, but we talked about this album a lot on the Facebook page. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yep.
Yeah.
By far, to me, the most enjoyable and satisfying album of the bunch we've done here today.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think out of all the bands we talked about, I think this is the only band where this album is better than the last band, than the last album we talked about with them. I think this one's better than The Last of Our Kind.
Yeah, I agree.
Totally.
Yeah. And I do like Last of Our Kind. That's really grown on me. But it was one of the ones where I had to listen a few times over and over. It wasn't instantly as likable for me as the first. And, yeah, I know you guys don't like the second one, One Way Ticket, but I still enjoy it quite a bit. And also that third one, Hot Cakes, which we all liked quite a bit.
Yeah, Hot Cakes was great.
Yep.
By the way, I had no idea
the song You're Really Growing on Me.
Yeah.
It's about herpes.
Oh, really?
Think about it.
That makes sense, knowing their sense of humor.
Yeah, when you hear that and you think about the lyrics, you go, yeah. How did I not know that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't get rid of you. I don't know who's growing on who.
The Darkness. I will still say it. I said it then, I will say it now. The Darkness are the best rock band going around still.
They're
all they care about is plugging their shit in and playing. That's all it is.
They're great. They've got the son of Roger Taylor from Queen on the drums.
And he is an absolute beast on the drums.
He's a beast. He's great.
Fucking great drummer.
He's not just going on the family name there. He's
no, not at all. And I really hope he sticks around, because they had another drummer on Last of Our Kind. It was perfectly fine, but I mean, Rufus is a much better drummer. So I hope this lineup sticks together, and they don't have the rotating drummer syndrome that they've had before in the past.
Yeah, no, it seems like he's been doing the interview circuit with Justin.
Yeah.
So that makes me think that he's kind of a permanent fixture.
Yeah, that's good that they just did. It was cool they didn't have just Justin and Dan Hawkins doing the circuit. They put Rufus out there as well. And they did an interview with Eddie Trunk, where it was just them, I think, late last year sometime. And
yeah, we posted it in the group.
Yeah, and Eddie Trunk, what Justin and Rufus were saying went right over his head. You could tell he was lost. It's like they completely fucked him right over, which was great to hear. Yeah, he had no clue.
But I think this album is very good. I think it's one of the best albums of 2017.
It's my favorite.
I didn't do my list, but you know, the Pinewood Smile.
Yeah.
Just the name of the album's great.
Yeah. Which is a take on the Hollywood Smile, but Pinewood being the Pinewood Studios.
Yes,
yeah.
Pinewood Studios. Yeah, it's great. So, John, what are some thoughts you had?
It's a blast from beginning to end. It just doesn't have any fat. And
it doesn't.
Great comeback from the last album, which I thought was okay. It's just not as good.
No, that's the thing. Last of Our Kind, not a bad record.
No.
It's just, it's not as good as Hot Cakes. It's not as good as Permission to Land, you know?
Yeah. This is like a comeback to that Slade meets Aerosmith type sound.
Yes.
That they're totally great at, so it's it's a fun record.
Exactly. So, right. What would you give it out of 10?
I'd give it an 8.
Good.
Yeah, and it's only 36 minutes long.
Yeah, it's short. It's sweet.
Yeah. What I see here, it says the vinyl version omits the track Happiness due to space limitations. It's 36 minutes. So you've seen some albums go for an hour on vinyl. I don't understand that thinking.
To keep the bass quality, you want to keep it short.
Yes.
For vinyl, and the only reason people buy vinyl is really for the bass feedback, and the bass quality, it's compromised if you make it a longer record.
And I've got this one on vinyl.
Yeah, like you don't want more than 15 minutes aside if you want to preserve strong bass on a vinyl record.
Oh, okay.
And Stuart, what would you give?
Well, I want to say I just about like every song here, but my two favorites, without a doubt, are Buccaneers of Hispaniola and Japanese Prisoner of Love.
Yes.
Both two fun songs.
And I mean, being an opening song whore, just a person who loves openers. All the Pretty Girls is killer.
Yeah. Solid Gold as well is fun. Southern Trains is, it's just great. For me, it's a 9, easily. The only thing I will say is I have the deluxe edition with the 4 bonus tracks on there. Okay, Stampede of Love, I get it. It's the closer. It's always a slow song for a closer. That's what The Darkness does.
Mm.
There's tracks on there like Uniball, which I really wouldn't mind being on the standard album, which is a great track, one of the bonus tracks. Rack of Glam is great, Rock in Space. But Uniball is one that was a missed opportunity, I reckon. So that's why I'll give it a 9 for the fact you've got to buy a deluxe edition to get it.
Interesting. Okay. Well, for me, I give it a 7. I think it's a really good record. I think
this is as good as the Cheap Trick one, then, is it? Because you gave that a 7.
Okay, give it an 8.
Yeah.
It's better than the Cheap Trick one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think out of the records we've done, this is the sort of one that's superior to the previous one that we covered.
Well, all the ones we listened to previously all sort of just seem to sludge their way through, whereas this one's just a fun album from start to finish.
Exactly.
You know, it's up-tempo, it's got great hooks in it, and it doesn't suffer from the loudness war, thank goodness.
No. Getting this one on vinyl was not a mistake.
Well, it was, because you missed one song.
You can't play it in your car, Hunter.
Yeah.
Whoa! I'm sorry!
But they've got a live album coming out as well in a few months, I believe it is.
Oh, I'm super excited about that.
Me too.
Anything The Darkness releases, I've been evangelical about this band, especially with the student population. You know, I'm like, you guys like 70s music, check out The Darkness. You know,
Well, not according to Eddie Trunk, you should check out The Struts. Well, The Struts are going to say rock.
The Struts. I hate The Stripes. The White Stripes?
No, The Struts.
The Struts.
Yeah, it's the band. Eddie Trunk just goes, fucking on and on.
I have not listened to
them. They are not good. The singer's trying to be Freddie Mercury, like really trying to be Freddie Mercury, and it's just, they're just shit rock. That's our new tag, shit rock. That's the Struts.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And when Eddie Trunk was doing his top 10 albums of last year, of course, they got the number one spot. I'm like, okay, what about The Darkness? That's a good album. He goes, oh, I got some honorable mentions to The Darkness. Like, you're a fucking idiot.
No, The Darkness, this album is great. You know, it would be in my top 10 for sure.
Eddie Trunk takes Kiss seriously, and he's like middle-aged. I mean, the Kiss are the fucking Archies in makeup and costumes.
Yeah, like, of course.
Who the hell is fooling? I mean, good Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I said on the Darkness episode, I can't remember, but I think they're better this time round, this second wave, than they are the first time round. They're just getting better and better.
No heroin.
No.
You know, with the Darkness, it's they've gone through the success bust period, and now they're just in the let's do good songs period.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. And which they joke about at live shows. They said there was a time when we were the biggest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And they still got their sense of humor as well, which I really enjoy.
All right, fellas. Well, let's sign out. We're going to do... We have another Rock Month coming up.
Next week. Not going to say who it is. Not saying who it is.
No.
Personally, I want to have all the album, episodes drop on the day, and the listeners find out who it is. And let's say for the next month, or next week's episode, the first one of Rock Month, we're heading up to the north of England. None of you going to get who it is. The only person who does know is Nesbitt. Anthony, don't say a word, because you and I were talking about him a couple of months back. Don't let the cat out of the bag of who it is. But Anthony definitely knows who they are. He knows of them. So that's all I'm saying.
Well, we got to talk about who John and I's picks are after this, so...
Yeah,
you weren't organized like me when I knew this back in January who I was picking, so, you know.
Yeah.
God forbid you have some sort of preparation done.
Anyway, well, let's go ahead, and that's Rock Month Preview. I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
I'll say corporations suck.
Oh!
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.